You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Some of you may have thought that my co-host Chris was gone for good, but it's just been a couple months and he's back in the hot seat here, getting ready to talk about everything from relativism to Disney's decision to make a, not a gay princess, but a gay character in the movies and much more to come.
Yeah, I'm back. Oh my gosh, I've been everywhere and back again over the last month. Oh my gosh.
We heard from one of the listeners last week that you were sitting in the airport in a massage chair eating Chick-fil-A during the show.
Oh my gosh. So I had a great summer of travel. No delays except for my very last trip where my flights got canceled. I had to reroute things. And so I was stuck in the Pittsburgh airport for a good deal of time. But God bless Pittsburgh Airport. They've got a Chick-fil-A. And I hit it every... I was in that airport a lot this summer. I hit it every time. Every time. And every time I'd be like, I'm getting a grilled chicken sandwich because I'm going to make a healthy choice. And then I'd get to the front of the line and be like, give me waffle fries and the fried one. I want the fried one. But yeah, Brookstone's got a massage chair. And I have no shame about that. I will sit in that sucker. But I also remembered I had a complimentary Admirals Club pass. So I went in and I sat in the Admirals Club and I lived like the rich people.
Nice for like your 2 hours of fame.
Oh my
there.
Gosh. Free snacks, comfy chairs. It was delightful.
So highlight of your trip. You've been gone for a couple months. Any really neat nugget of maybe a testimony someone came up and shared with you after you're speaking?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a couple things stand out, but one in particular was I was at Catholic Family Land. And if you're not familiar with Catholic Family Land, the Apostolate for Family Consecration runs this camp in Ohio. And they'll host these family fests throughout the summer. And it's, I don't know, like maybe 150, 200 families come, but it ends up being like 700 people because they all have a group of kids. And I'd spoken to a group of middle school students and I had my wares, you know, t-shirts and books and stuff people could grab. And this kid didn't have any money. And so he ended up like he and his parents like chased all over the camp apparently after trying to find me to get a book, which was really, I mean, in junior high school chases you down to get a book. I don't think there's anything more flattering than that. So I ended up giving him just a copy of Fire Inside because I'm like, you did the work, kid. You can have the book.
You know? Made it.
So that was neat. And then so with Franciscan University, I get to host those conferences and you really get to be the youth minister for a weekend, you know, and so your youth group is 1,000 kids or, you know, 3,000 kids for a weekend. And so you get to have a lot of, I personally try to seek out those conversations with students outside of the venue. So you're just really reaching people. And one of the things I love is I get to do a workshop for graduating seniors, just on how do you live your faith out in the world. And the point I always make with my graduating seniors at those conferences is, you know, we as Catholics, we're not an inward looking people. We're an outward looking people. Like the church, you know, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. And so if you go to school with that mindset of, well, how do I keep my faith? You're going to lose it, mm-hmm. right? Because our faith wasn't meant to be, you know, hidden. It's not a, you know, you're not a light under a basket. You're a light on a lampstand. So go out and share that faith. And you know, talking to kids about how to, you know, if there's a great campus organization, join it, right? Yeah. If it's not great, join it anyway, and it'll be better because you're there.
And grow it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if for some reason it's just unredeemable, then start something for yourself. You know, get together with a couple friends and just dive into the Word or go over the Liturgy of the Word for Mass or start encouraging each other to get to confession or set appointments to get to Mass with each other and just really empowering young people. So I had a lot of great conversations with our graduating seniors about that.
But you know what? That comment, that whole conversation overall is so relevant because it doesn't matter if you're a forthcoming college freshman, you're just going to high school, you're a mom with two little kids, making the effort to join groups that will enrich you in your faith. And if there aren't groups that you can join, create them with one or two friends.
Yeah, my life changed that way. You know, I had the experience where I went home one summer from college and I met a girl And she was in love with Jesus, but not in the Catholic Church. And so we would gather and we would go and we'd do a Bible study on the beach. And it turns out one of the guys, John, ended up forming a band called Switchfoot. Kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But I came back the next summer and we'd broken up because that's the way life is. And I wanted that community. I wanted young people. I wanted to be around people who were excited about Jesus that way. So my brother and I and a couple friends, we started that in our living room. And we didn't know what we were doing. And we called it a Bible study. There was no study. We just read the Bible and talked about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then one of the guys, Ryan, played guitar badly and we'd sing a little worship. I mean, he'd like knew three chords and he was not good at it. But by the end of the summer, we had about 80 young people gathered with us once a week. There was a guy in town who would send us pizzas. He'd ask, how many can you pay for? And then how many do you need? And he'd send as many as we needed. And it changed my life because this faith is mine. I'm not going to sit back and just kind of roll through life. I want to be assertive. I want to go out and find community. I want to form community. I want to be intentional about community and intentional about living that out and finding people who will support me in that struggle.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. You are listening to Trending. You know, we're going to talk about relativism to really kick off today's show. And this is why, because coming up are some topics that are very relevant to this issue. Relativism, things such as I decline my sexuality as what it is biologically, and I define it as what I want it to be. So we're going to be talking about Disney having its first gay character. We'll also be talking about the fact that Hungary, where they've had incredible changes in their family policy, the government has decided to clear out the university studies of gender studies. And we'll also be talking about respect and how fundamental that is to a man and the equivalent of a woman needing to feel love. The man's need to be respected and how to live that out in a practical way. So we'll be talking about that and much more. But this topic of relativism, man, Chris, it is so relevant in terms of what is happening today.
Right. And it's funny, you say relativism, and I don't think most people immediately go, what does that mean? You know, we encounter it on a constant basis. I would say the ruling philosophy of our culture is relativism, but we don't think of it in those terms.
Right.
You know, you hear people say like, well, I'm just following my heart. Well, that's relativism. You'll hear things like, well, you know, you're not defined by your biology. You're defined by how you feel.
Or you do you.
You do you. That again, that's relativism. And so relativism is actually a school of philosophy that in its kind of global sense, and not that when we say global relativism, we're not talking about ecology. It's the idea that there is no truth. That truth, there is nothing, there's no true statement. Now, that is, it's fallible right there. I mean, there's a problem with it right at the outset. What's the problem with that, Tim?
You're automatically saying that something doesn't exist that exists.
Well, yeah. And
you're saying
and,
no.
Well, and also that statement, there is no truth, it's self-refuting.
Yes, it's claiming that the exact opposite. That is claiming a truth in and of itself.
Right, yeah. And so if you're saying there is no truth, you're asserting a truth. And so all of a sudden, your brain explodes.
And this is the reality that we're living in. We define our own reality, which is why we're talking about all of a sudden someone can say, well, I'm not this, that, or the other thing. I'm a dolphin. I'm a female. I'm a male. There's no definition to anything we live in today. And that's okay. We're supposed to be compassionate.
Right. And the issue you have there is then you have no grounds to say anything is wrong. Because if there is no truth, truth is really depending upon what your heart feels or whatever. Well, then, you know, my friend Sean Forrest says this beautifully. He goes, well, wasn't Hitler doing the same thing? Mm-hmm. Right. Wasn't Hitler just being Hitler? He's doing his own thing. And who am I to judge? Right. Or in cultures where they throw people off of roofs for their sexuality. Who are you to say that's wrong? Because that's their cultural, you know, their cultural relativism, right? It's right in their culture to throw somebody off a roof. Or Jeffrey Dahmer ate people. Who am I to judge? Right. Like, and that's the issue you have with that relativism, and particularly a global relativism, there is no truth, is it leads to a society that can't say right or wrong.
Well, and think about how problematic this is from a Catholic perspective. What's happening is it's going against Catholic ideology, Christianity, where we say you can be transformed, you can become a better you, you can be remade, reborn within God. But then for what? If you can't be remade into anything, if there is no truth, then there is no meaning as to what you will be made in, because there is no truth. There is no perfection. There is no ideal.
Right. Now, most people you're going to run into don't really ascribe to like a global relativism where they say there's no truth. What they'll ascribe to is a local relativism where they'll say, well, I think there's scientific truth, but morality, well, that's more relative, right? And you hear that all the time. And they'll say things like, well, because look at different cultures. Different cultures have different moralities, right?
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, the answer to that is, and C.S. Lewis put this really well, he goes, well, really, no, they don't. I mean, like, I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, like, in what culture do we hold up the person who runs from battle? You know, in which culture do we hold up people who lie, cheat, and steal? You know, you're never going to find a culture that puts up a statue to this guy because he really betrayed all his friends, right? And so this idea of, well, different cultures have different moralities. No, they all typically have the same morality, but how that's applied varies because their understanding of the sanctity of a human being is, and how that's played out and who is a human being is always a little bit different from place to place.
Absolutely, man. And I just look at it in the issue of having a purpose in life. There can be no purpose if there is no truth. Whether it's a purpose in marriage, purpose in any type of relationship, to be quite frank, right?
Oh, yeah, I think absolutely.
That's why we have the level of sexual promiscuity that we do. But when you bring truth into your world, it radically changes things, which is why education is so fundamental to the Catholic lifestyle and diving deeper and deeper, being transformed, right, by the renewal of our minds.
Oh, absolutely. I love St. Paul saying that. Be transformed by the renewal of your minds, because it really speaks to how the mind works too. Mm-hmm. Like the mind reroutes, it changes, it restructures itself when you're forming different habits. And as we form habits of sanctity, your mind is literally changed. And so I love it. The church always, you know, nature always cooperates with God, and it's such a beautiful way we see that.
Well, and you mentioned just a second ago how science is many people's truth today. Well, this is what's so awesome sometimes about some of the work that I'm able to do within the topic of sexual morality, because guess what? All the social sciences are agreeing with what we're seeing, from the impact of pornography addiction, impact of abortion on the woman. Science is consistent with us.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk a little bit more of this just on the other side.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C. Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
You know, Timmery, I loved how you said, as we're talking about truth, the idea that you live your life with a purpose, that things have a purpose, right? And I think that's when we have these ideas of everything's relative, we forget that things have a purpose. There's like a fundamental purpose for things. And I think most people, if they saw like a sick tree and a healthy tree, they wouldn't have a hard time saying which one's healthy and which one's sick, because you kind of go, well, that one's better at being a tree. Right. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, when we look at truth, you got to kind of say, and the church speaks about this in natural law, truth helps us be better at what we are as human beings. Right. And or, you know, morality in terms of sexuality, what helps us be healthier in our sexuality, because it helps us live out what sex is and what sex isn't, you know, and you know, obviously, Humana Vitae speaks to that and how that protects us. So I, you know, we hear that term natural law tossed around a lot, and I think it can be hard to get around. But ultimately, natural law points us to how we can be better at being what we are, human, mm-hmm. you know.
And that there's a function even to our sexual organs. And that's why people are speaking out against movies such as the new Disney movie, The Jungle Cruise. Because, you know, when we start showing something, especially to young minds, right? When we start showing them that this is the new normal, it creates, when you are sitting watching TV, you're just receiving something. It's creating new types of ideology within their brain that can be very, very detrimental. It's interesting, though. So Jungle Cruise, the first gay character, is being played by a British comedian, Jack Whitehall. And it's interesting because the LGBTQ community, many of them are actually complaining about this.
I know. It's so, well, he's not gay. How dare he play a gay person?
Hold on. You're supposed to have this reaction. You're an actor. I am just in awe at the fact that someone saying he can't play that character because he's not gay. Isn't he supposed to be an actor to begin with?
I know. But it's Hollywood's so weird, right? I mean, Disney, you make it so hard for me to love you. Why is this necessary? I don't understand. And again, you are putting this, and you're basically, you're saying we're adopting and purporting and putting out an agenda to kids. That's what we're doing. I think in terms of Disney, and a lot of people who work in the industry, what they're saying is, well, this is settled. This is settled. It's not controversial anymore. And if it is controversial, you're the problem, not us.
Well, and long before they started doing this in their movies, Disneyland has notoriously celebrated Gay Pride Day. I can say we've accidentally stumbled upon Disneyland on Gay Pride Week and many of those days that they've really kind of helped promote that agenda. But now we're really starting to see it come into the movies. We saw it last year with Beauty and the Beast. And the one character, who is it? What's his name? Who's Gaston's like right-hand man?
Oh, yeah. Lefou. I speak not the French.
Yeah. But, you know, we saw the beginning of this coming, and many people thought that the next Frozen movie, Elsa, would be the first gay princess. It just breaks my heart, because what happens is, many of you guys have heard me say this, what happens is those characters, all of their talk time ends up having to do about their sexuality. And it breaks my heart because you are not defined by your sexuality and your sexual attraction alone.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how the CW is doing this, you know, wholeheartedly with their superhero series. They're kind of, I mean, you cannot watch the CW superhero series. It's so full of agenda. I just think you're dealing with questions here. You're pushing something that, A, your audience isn't really equipped to deal with, right? Young children, for the most part, aren't really dealing with those questions of sexuality, right? They're living in the context of a mom and dad situation, if they're living in a natural situation, right? And that idea of same-sex attraction, all of those things, you know, in a prepubescent child, that's not really an issue. And as they come through puberty, what they've shown time and time again through studies is that someone who might be dealing with same-sex attraction in early puberty is probably going to have that resolved and be dealing with a opposite-sex attraction by the end of puberty, because we have things called hormones that dictate kind of our sexual development.
Right? Same thing with a struggle with all of a sudden them thinking they identify as something else, if they even understand the difference between male and female at that time. I always make the joke that I don't think I fully understood the differences until my brother was born and I was about 8.
Yeah, I mean, and there's this study that, and I'm sorry, I'm missing the title instead. I got to reference it, but they did this where they followed people and they asked them at various points in their life, you know, have you ever been attracted to a man? Have you ever been attracted to a woman? Blah, blah, blah. And respondents who had said, yes, I am attracted strongly to men, when they came back and asked them 5 years later, this is man on man kind of thing, 5 years later, they were like, no, actually, no, I don't feel that way anymore. They did change. They did develop. They did grow, you know, and so I think we're in this culture that says, well, gosh, we need to start giving kids hormone therapy when they're babies or you know, early adolescence. Or we need to define, oh, you're dealing with same-sex attraction, you're gay. Well, you're 8, so no, you know, you're not.
And these are puberty-blocking hormones that are going to cause any number of issues down the road. Here's the reality, Chris. We actually don't fully understand the long-term impact of hormone replacement therapy at this level.
Right. You know, and so I, what is the compassionate Catholic response to people who deal with same-sex attraction? Well, A, we love them, right? There's no love without truth. There's no truth without love, but we share the truth, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but that's not what Disney is pushing. Disney is pushing this cultural assertion that if you love someone, you have to accept them and, you know, warts and all. And I would say if you love someone, you work towards their good. Mm-hmm. You know, period.
Well, and what kills me is that sometimes we do these shows and you hear a lot of people who are grateful, because we want to talk about this regularly, because I know you guys are struggling with family members who are experiencing same-sex attraction, and there are logistical things, family dinners that become awkward and you have to handle certain conversations or avoid certain things at times. And I have to say, from someone, I have multiple family members in my family who are gay, and we have lived with this for years before it became the thing to be compassionate toward. And we were always loving and compassionate, but there was a standard that was expected within the home. There was a standard of how people interact. And if those lines were crossed, that's when you start to push back a little bit more.
Well, and I have an adolescent son who is, he's a freshman in high school, and he has a not girlfriend because he's not allowed to date, right? So she's not his girlfriend and he's not her boyfriend. And then we're all aware of it. But navigating those
waters.
They're
going steady.
I don't have any idea. They're wonderful and they're sweet kids, and they see each other at church and, you know, they're great. But at some point in his life, you know, I hope we never have to have that conversation where it's like, hey, here's the reality. Sexual promiscuity is not acceptable, and it's not acceptable in our home. And if you choose to engage in that lifestyle, there are going to be repercussions temporally in our home as well, because my goal here is not to make you feel good about your life choices. My goal is to set you on a path that's going to lead you back to your Father in heaven. And ultimately, if you don't like me because I loved you enough to say hard things to you, then that's your choice. But if I don't love you enough to say hard things to you, I don't love you.
And that's the compassionate response. And that's where we need to be. You know, my take too on this Disney topic, we need to talk about, you know, the LGBTQ issue overall. But here's part of my take. I am really feeling like we are being called to be more aware of what's going on TV. It's time to shut down these TVs a little bit more. I'm actually going to propose a lot more.
No, I would agree.
And I think it's time, if we're going to watch TV, have it be family time, not alone time to get ready or detox, read a book, go outside, find people to be with. And I'm going to say, embrace the classic old shows that are clean cut. You know, even I laugh, Seventh Heaven, right, from the 90s is way cleaner than stuff today. And I remember even back then thinking, oh, should I like be watching this at times?
Yeah, I know. It's funny. I had a friend in college who ended up on Seventh Heaven. He and his brother, Jeff and George and Jeff Stultz.
The fireman?
The fireman. Yeah,
oh,
I went
man.
To college with that guy. But it was just every time I hear that show, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. But, you know, I agree. We turned off cable to our home a number of years ago because I just started realizing there were so many people who were allowed into my home I would never invite into my home.
Ooh.
And I don't, you know, it's not that, and I wouldn't let them influence my kids. I wouldn't let them teach my kids. And so there were lifestyles happening that I wouldn't accept in my home. And so we watch Netflix, we watch Amazon Prime, but, you know, the kids have access to an alley in Amazon Prime. They can't go on all of it and see all of it or Netflix. We watch TV together. No one has TVs in their room. We don't enable this stuff on our kids' phones because now we've got adolescents and they do have phones. But when stuff comes on, that's, we talk about it if something slips through. And there are shows that we've, you know, like we wanted to watch all the superhero shows because we love that stuff and we just can't.
I know. I've actually been shutting down the superhero shows and it breaks my heart. And by the way, I said a return to the classics and then I thought of Seventh Heaven. That is not an old classic. I'm talking like the old school black and white, Singing in the Rain, Take Me Out to the Ball
right.
Game. But I mean, there is a lot of content even from the 90s that is clean cut and it actually allows when things go wrong in many ways, it allows for a good conversation and a thought.
Watch Full House. Not Fuller House.
Yeah.
I mean, and I hate that too, because I got to hang out on, I had a friend who was on Full House, and now she's on Fuller House, and I got to hang out backstage. I wanted to share that with my kids. I was on an episode of Full House, and I wanted to share that with my kids when Fuller House came on. And then we watched the first episode, and I said, we can't watch this, because it's just, there's so much innuendo.
And you know, even that I get, there are a lot of people who are like, I'm just enjoying it. It's way cleaner than most things, but there's too much innuendo. I've been surprised in some cases, while a lot of them dress super cute, the mom DJ, I'm always kind of surprised, some of the outfits every now and again, it's like, you're mom and your belly's showing, like, what is this?
Yeah, it's a little bit much. And so again, but you go back, you watch Full House, not Fuller House, you know.
Exactly.
and you go back and you watch some of the shows, but you, even then, you know, there's something about Hollywood where they always try to slip in something, a little innuendo for the adults, right? Something a little bit off color for the adults. And I just don't think about it as you're tempted to say, oh, well, this is going to go over the kids' heads. They're not going to realize it anyway. And no, they do. And what it does is it desensitizes them to these things as they grow older.
Well, and it changes from enjoying something to being indoctrinated perpetually by what you're watching. And I know people are like, oh, hey, I'm just watching a TV show. No, you're rewiring the way you think about homosexuality, the way you think about promiscuity, the way you think about abortion, you name it. And here's the reality, Chris, the only person that's going to change what's going on in our homes, what content is coming through them, is us. Disney's going to continue to adopt more of this gay agenda, but only we can change it.
Well, and I'm going to say too, you know, you endorse things with your view. If they can't sell it, they won't make it. And so as Catholics, as believers in Jesus Christ, if we just stop going to these things, they're going to make what sells.
Absolutely. The more we speak up, the more we choose to have power of what we're watching will really make a difference.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So this past week, I was working on my CPR, AED training, I guess doing the Heimlich. And it was really funny because, well, good that I was learning how to do CPR and the differences using an AED where you shock them with a baby, an infant versus a 1-year-old versus an adult.
So I haven't taken the class in a while. Would you shock a baby?
Yes, you would.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's...
Whoa.
Yeah, you need to know how to do it, though.
I imagine you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I've got you covered. But even the difference with how you handle a choking situation with a baby and how you use an AED on a baby, big difference. I was really glad that I did it. But one of the interesting things that came up is the lady who was doing the training was talking about how when she's doing the trainings, anytime the women have the baby, they're like gently holding the baby and like they pick the baby up all gently. And she said every time without fail, one of the guys just picks up the baby from the foot and the women are like looking aghast at this guy.
You know, I've observed this in children because I've got, you know, girls and boys, and my daughter, it just, oh, she has like a whole nursery of infants, you know, and just of every type of looking baby you could get. And she loved them and she'd hold them. And so then when her little brother was born and he got old enough to get to them, it was, they were clubs with which to bludgeon people. I mean, they're just no love for any of, you know, and then so you'd see this, and then the next baby comes, and you're like, oh my gosh, don't let them near the child, like, you know, because they don't get it, you know, the girls. And it's not something you teach. You're not like, oh, you hold the baby. You give the kid both the baby to hold. It's just boys. It's just different. They just, you know, and maybe it's the, you know, girls want to have the imagination of that, or I don't know. And the boys just don't play that way. I don't know. I can't speak to nature versus nurture there. I can just say observation says. I would not give my infant a child to hold.
Your story is reminding me of a family friend who I remember them saying that they got so curious about how this baby talked, how his sister's baby talked. And so one day his sister's gone, parents are distracted, and he took this beloved doll and just pieced it apart, cutting it
wow.
up, getting to the inside, finding the voice box, and then taking it apart. He's like, aha, as soon as he found the voice box.
Wow.
There were many, many tears there. But I even found myself, I was laughing. So they showed us how to do the CPR training, and the head's like cocked backward, and it's got this like metal thing to hold the head back.
Mm-hmm.
And for like 2 minutes, it's just sitting in front of me, and the head's like back at this weird angle. And finally, I just like readjust
yeah.
on the little doll and like set it gently there. And I was laughing at myself. I couldn't handle the doll being there with its neck at this weird angle.
Right. Yeah.
Well, this brings up in my mind one of the issues of gender studies. I think that there's a lot that could be said about them, but I found it really interesting, Chris. I found out recently that Hungary, and we talked about them on the show not too long ago, I think right before you left, about how Hungary's really totally decreased their abortion numbers. They've increased their marriages. They've changed the family policy in Hungary.
Right.
And just over the last 7 to 10 years, it's been an astronomical difference for life and for marriage and family. And now what they're doing is the government itself has actually removed gender studies from any of the institutions that they are running, universities. It's incredible.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, and again, they're saying there's no economic rationale for these to be there. Like, it's, you know, what's the point? Well, man, when you consider getting a university education, that's a great question to ask. You know, like, I'm majoring in, and you go, why?
Well, and even the government spokespeople have said this doesn't help anyone to get into the labor market. This doesn't continue to help with any form of education, really, because why? It's based on ideology, not reality.
Right. You know, and so I think there is some value. I mean, okay, the opinion of Chris Mueller. I think there's some value to understanding the way women think, the way men think. Right. I think that. So if you're saying gender studies, it's really getting to know like the psychology of men, the psychology of women. I think there could be great benefit to that, and great benefit to that in the workplace, because it's going to change the dynamic of an office. Right.
Absolutely.
But that's not what gender studies is. It really kind of almost becomes like this Marxist thing where you're dealing with the oppression of gender studies. And the
exactly. man.
And I just feel like I just so sick of ideology warriors pitting us all against each other.
You know, really kind of interesting story. So I did a debate against the feminist professor at Cal State University San Marcos a few years ago, and it was on her home turf. It was a big event at the school. They had like 300 to 500 people there, and she invited all of her students in her gender ideology classes to come. And so what ended up happening is it was about 99% gender studies students and a trickling of people who were pro-life who showed up. And man, the Q&A, I'm sitting here like all they know is sexism and more sexism and more sexism. That's basically
right.
all they've been taught. And I wonder how you study that for 4 years.
Yeah, we do have to kind of acknowledge that, you know, there was a point in time where women couldn't vote. I mean, there have been,
absolutely,
you know, we have had strides towards seeing each other in a proper light. And that's mm-hmm. the way I'll say it. But what is the point of a gender studies course? I mean, that or a gender studies program? I think that's an interesting question for them to ask. How does that help someone in moving forward and furthering their situation?
Well, and it amazes me because no one is talking about what is happening in China. They're saying, oh, China's getting possibly going to get away with just removing their one-child policy. And everyone corrects me, oh, it's a two-child policy. No, it's not.
No.
If you both of the parents come from a family with one child, you can ask the government and maybe get permission to have a second child. But here's the deal. If you have a child and that child is not sanctioned by the government, that child has no type of birth certificate,
right,
no right to school, no right to marry, can't travel, has no health care, this child, although Chinese, living there in China, has no rights and basically is destined to be a destitute.
Right. Yeah, it's not, you're not a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the citizenship has major advantage. Yeah, China's a weird place as far as human rights and our entanglement with China. I just don't know how we get around that.
I mean, from the level of just things that are being made there, I know I've had friends who have tried to buy nothing that is made in China.
It's hard.
I have someone who, okay, I can at least not buy shoes made in China because she loves shoes and it makes her be more temperate. And you look at it and we are so entangled in our culture to dependence on China, yet look at what is happening.
Right. Oh, yeah. Back to this idea of removing gender studies from the curriculum at these universities. I think the devil's advocate conversation is then, well, then how do you advocate for women's rights in a society? Because there are definitely cultures around the world where women aren't seen as equals, where they're not seen, where we don't see each other in our proper light. Let me put it that way. We don't
Absolutely.
See the dignity of the human person. So if you're going to get rid of gender studies, then how do you advocate for it?
Well, I mean, on one level, you answered it in your first comments, having to do with areas of neuroscience, having to do with the areas of psychology. What happens is gender studies is not based on science most of the time. It's focused on the idea of oppression
right.
in many senses. And so in reality, someone who's focusing on gender studies could go and take a neuroscience class. And this is why neuroscientists are being called neurosexists, because they're saying, there's a difference even on the level of the brain, not just on sizes of brain, et cetera.
Sure. And I think maybe there's a place for, you know, the history of women in the United States in history department. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a separate study, but it's part of the curriculum in like an overall, you know, if you're going to view history, let's look at the role of women in the United States or the role of women globally or the women in Islam or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at that in a particular, you know, in a particular department, but the idea of that the entire course of your study is going to be focused around gender studies is kind of hard to grasp how that is an effective course of study.
Well, and I see where the Hungarian government, I mean, many of them were coming out from their own office talking about how not only is this diverting good money from good programs for programs that are not based in reality, it's just ideology, but they're also saying it doesn't help people in the workforce. And
right.
it's a reminder, especially I think from a Catholic perspective, what is education for? Now, we could go down two pathways here. Education in and of itself should be for the betterment of the mind, the betterment of the human being so that you grow, right? The earlier we were talking about St. Paul talking about be transformed by the renewal of your mind so that you can be a new creation, right? But on another level, you have the important element of having some sort of trade, some sort of job that you're being prepared for. But
right.
we live in a time where people want to combine education for the goodness of the person and education for a job together. And that's where we've gotten even into the mess of just financially where we're at with education.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there is such a tension between education for the sake of the development of the human being. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, education towards truth,
right?
Towards discerning truth, towards wisdom, towards just being a well-rounded human being. And then the utilitarian idea of, but I also, you know, education towards, is this going to help you flourish in this society?
Mm-hmm.
And I, for a gender studies course, I just, again, how is that going to help you economically? How's it going to help you in the utilitarian sense? Unless you're going to go, the only thing I think of is if you're going to take that and you're going to go to maybe law school or something, because you're going to go get your professional skills training after, right? So it's mm-hmm. just something that's prepping you to go to, you know, your professional school. How does that, you know, you're going to graduate with a gender studies degree and then go out and contribute in a meaningful way.
Well, and I've looked at PhD programs surrounding gender studies women, and I actually would totally consider doing it. Why? Because I want to know how they're thinking. I want to know what they're saying, and I want to be able to respond. And I mean, you think about it, you have a PhD in something like that. Everyone's like, oh, come in, open the doors. You are praising women and their struggles universally, which we do, but maybe adding more science than you are using in many ways.
Yeah, it's interesting. This article that we're kind of referring to, it makes a note that there are two universities that offered graduate degrees in gender studies in Hungary, and they only had 13 students combined. I think that's, but okay, you look at the, like, for instance, I'm in California, you look at our university system, and, you know, oh, there's a huge economic issue right now, right? Where we've kind of become bloated, and the universities cost more and more and more and more and more and more. And then you have to kind of look and go, well, okay, well, maybe there are programs that we're indulging in that have no purpose, right? And so maybe it's time to cut them. Now, the other side of the argument is, okay, we'll cut theater arts then, right? Cut music then, you know, cut those non-utilitarian programs. And where's that line? And I think that's where you know, that's a difficult question.
That's a really hard question to ask. And I think that something that we always have to remember, that education is fundamental to our Catholic lifestyle, always growing, always reading. But education for a job training is very different, and we have to find the balance between the two always.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
You know, Chris, I was just thinking, in light of Hungary ditching, the government ditching any gender ideology studies, we mentioned earlier that studies of neuroscience, psychology for men and women working together in the workplace, men and women in marriages, and how that marital dynamic works.
Yeah.
These are all really important things, and something we're going to be talking more and more about on the show, which is why, you know, you have a male-female co-host. We want to bring femininity and masculinity to light in the culture today, where I think we are hungry for it.
Yeah, it's funny because it becomes a controversial statement to say men are different than women. Inherently. But we are. I mean, our women are different than men inherently. And, you know, it becomes controversial, but it's true. I mean, and if you look again, neuroscience is going to point towards there's just differences. And psychology is going to point to there are just some differences in the way we process things, the way we talk about things, the way we hear things. Or so there's either this culture like everybody's the same, there's no different. Or you have the gender studies view, which is like, no, we're totally different and we're constantly at war and men are the oppressors. I mean, and so it's such a weird thing. It's like you know, or the idea of like you can't, like, sexuality is fluid and it can change unless you are one of these kind of preferred classes. And then how dare you try to change someone, right?
Right.
Like if you are dealing with same-sex attraction, well, that's fluid and it can change unless you have same-sex attraction, in which case, if you try to tell someone who has same-sex attraction that they can change back, no, you can't possibly do that. It's such a weird time we live in.
So we're going to be incredibly politically incorrect, and you're going to enjoy it here because we're going to talk about this book. A friend of mine was reading it, and she recommended it to me because there were some points in there that just really stood out to her. She said, I think you'll enjoy this. So she literally brought the book over to my house, and we were working through it together. I picked up a copy. It's called For Women Only, and it's a subtitle. Title is What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men. It's written by Shanti Feldhahn, and it is an incredible book. Just chewing on this, I want to really piece together this first chapter where it talks about respect. Now, it's interesting, Chris, because here's what it comes down to. It's saying that for men, what really matters is respect. And the way women want to know that they're loved, men need to know that they're respected. And they'd rather be respected. Almost 75% of men would rather feel respected than feel like they weren't then loved, like if they had to go between the two.
Right. You know, it's interesting because the author even points this out. And I actually found the first chapter of this book to be a little bit insightful. I mean, I really did. I was reading it going, yeah, okay, I get that. And it wasn't so much that, you know, we say respect, like men want to be respected. And I think a lot of times, again, in this men versus women mindset, we go, men want to be respected, which means they want to rule their homes. And that's not at all what men were saying. And essentially that men, it's not that men want to be respected more, they want to be loved. It's like the same thing.
Yes.
Like you love them, that's how they feel loved.
And I think that was transformational to hear that. I think most people would not understand that just like a woman, even in her unlovable moments, still needs to know that she's loved, a man in his unlovable moments needs to know that him as a human being is respected.
Well, and it's so for men, it's, and she touches on this, I don't want to get too far ahead, but like even in those moments of crushing defeat, where we all face those moments of like, oh, I just feel like I'm a jerk, or I screwed up, or I was working on this project around the house and the stain didn't go in the wood right, and I feel so stupid. If your spouse or your significant other, you know, comes in and says, oh, you really screwed that up, you know, it's like, oh, I'm lower than, I have no use, or, and I need to go away, and, you know.
You feel inadequate.
Oh, totally. And you feel, it's a different, men hear it in a different way than women intend to say it. When a woman says something like, well, why don't we just hire somebody to do that? She's being very utilitarian. Like, okay, it'd be faster, it'd be cheaper, it'd save you time. But a man hears, I don't believe you can actually get that done. You know, and it, and I don't, you know, it, and it's like a value statement. Where women don't intend it that way.
And there's so much to be said here. I think we're going to kind of run through these because I want to be practical. Because I think today, Chris, a lot of people are going to say, okay, you're saying that I need to find a way to better respect the men in my life. And this actually includes young men,
I'd say teenagers. It absolutely includes young men and teenagers.
And I think especially because they will learn, in a sense, the importance of respect and that longing on their heart, just like a young girl needs to know that she's loved in high school growing up. This is really important for growing young men.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about the importance of a father in the life of a young woman. Right? The affirmation of dad, the respect a dad shows to mom and to the young woman. I would say in the life of young men, we often talk about the father's role there, but the way that mom holds you up and shows you that you're capable in a different way than dad does, right? You know, and you know, when you take those first steps, or you're learning to drive or whatever it is, and oh, that you're doing great, or oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. And all those little, you know, wow, you're really good at this, even when you're not that great at it. You start to kind of blossom under that.
Yeah. Or you're doing well, or I see you're really trying hard.
Right.
You
know,
you're,
oh, absolutely.
You're working on this. So here's the deal. Some people might be in what the author calls the crazy cycle, where the woman feels unloved and therefore she does not show respect, or vice versa. And the only way to stop this, is to break the cycle by how you behave, because ultimately that's all that you can control. And one way to kind of monitor, and I thought this was interesting, it made sense to monitor if someone feels like they're not being respected, is men tend to get angry when they don't feel respected.
I would agree. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's not a rational thing. We always want to go, oh, well, he's doing that because he doesn't feel respected. No, he's doing that because he doesn't feel right. Like something feels wrong. Like something's not working. And so when you're having this conversation about something and or directions in the car, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden he blows up because you keep giving him directions. That's, he couldn't articulate, well, you're not respecting me. He's just, but he's feeling attacked, right?
I love how she puts it in the book. He's trying to conquer Everest for you.
Absolutely.
And he really truly is. And it might just seem like directions to you and you're just thinking, I want to get there on time or whatever it might be. But you're saying, I don't think you can do this.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's run through these. So there are six of these. Let's run through. The first one, here's how men need to be respected. They need to be respected in their judgment. So things such as being deferred to, and the importance of being respected in their judgments, even more so at home, in order to feel that way in work. And they shouldn't feel more respected at work in their judgments than at home.
Right. And I'd argue a lot of men in our, I think there's a lot of issue with that today, where a lot of men kind of tune out and they're like, whatever. Because they feel like their input isn't valuable, and so they just tune out. Now I will say the wanting to be consulted, the wanting to say that again. How'd she phrase it?
You know, being deferred to is really important.
I think there's a line though. I mean, there's like we don't need to be deferred to on everything. Like
yes,
you know, like,
and you still have your opinion. You're not closing that
absolutely,
out at all.
You know, but yeah, there's certain a deference, and I think men reciprocate that too. You know, right. But I just like women will say things like, I don't want to be asked where I want to go to dinner. I just want him to decide and take me to dinner. You know what I mean?
So say I want Italian food and then he can decide.
Right. Exactly. That's a way to kind of get through that. And I think, but there's a lot of, I hear this complaint from young women all the time. Well, they kind of talk about how men, they don't pursue. They don't set up a date. It's just a kind of like, they kind of like wander through those things. And it's because they haven't been affirmed that way. They haven't been shown like, hey, pick a course and go. You know, and so if you have a man in your life who sort of struggles with that, to affirm it and go, you know what, I'm good with whatever you want to do. And not because you have no opinion, no feeling, but you're just giving them permission to take a chance.
Absolutely. Well, and I think deferment too, looking in two ways, in areas where you could be the one to make the decision quick, actually look and go, well, what do you think?
Right.
But also, I think the hardest portion in deferring is when you're having a conversation and you disagree and you want to cut in, and sometimes just having the respect in those moments on how you respond or going, does this really matter right now?
You know, I realized the day I was driving in the car with my wife, and she just naturally, maybe it's whoever drives the car puts the music on, but I had whatever music I was listening to, and it might have been Latin jazz at that point. And I stopped and I said, well, what do you want to listen to? You know, and she goes, what do you mean? I goes, like, I honestly don't think I even know like what you would listen to if I wasn't in the car. And she kind of stopped and I'm like, well, what do you, you know? And she was like, well, I mean, I like what we listen to. I'm like, yeah, but if you're picking, what would it be? So she's kind of defers in that, but that doesn't mean that your husband's going to become a terrorist, right? You know what I mean? And but it gives them the opportunity then to not be reactive all the time because they're being told what to do all the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think men tend to be a lot more sensitive when we're not caught in that reaction. I don't have any control over my life sort of place.
Oh boy, there are six of these. I'd like to hit the next
one.
All right,
I'll stop inferring so much.
No, okay. I think this is great because you're helping to get into it. I think what we're going to do is on the next episode, you may not hear it on your network, but you can catch it at radiotrending.com. We're going to cover the rest of these if we don't get to all of them. But I want to talk about how men need to be respected in their abilities. And you already actually covered this, just driving in directions. And the fact that they can figure it out, they're trying to conquer Everest for you, but you don't always get that necessarily.
Well, yeah. And I used to, when I was, you know, growing up and when I was in my 20s, I was doing a little bit of acting in Hollywood. In Los Angeles, if you don't leave an hour early, you're going to be late because you just don't know what's going to happen. And so I'd end up places early and I just drive around for an hour and it's a grand adventure. You know what I mean? And so for a guy, being lost isn't the end of the world. It's sort of fun. Where it becomes stressful is when you start feeling like you failed being lost. You know what I mean? And so looking for a parking space at the zoo, right? That becomes stressful when it's like, well, you know, when it's not a hunt anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. Like, you know, it's okay to take a wrong turn every now and then.
So let's just get this third one in, and that is what he accomplishes. He needs to be respected for his accomplishments. And, you know, kind of the idea for women, there's this difference. Women need to be respected for who they are on the inside. Men need to be respected for what they do on the outside.
It's funny. I read this section and I laughed a little bit because every time.
Hold on. I'm just going to say that because cut in. Men need to be respected for what they do on the outside.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would agree. I laughed because every time I mow the lawn or do yard work, I'm like, all right, honey, come see what I did. You know,
it's like flexing his muscles.
Silly. Or I'll clean the house and I want her to see it. And sometimes she'll be like, I clean the house every day. I'm like, but I did this. Look at this. I've done this for you. And it's a different sort of thing, right?
I always call these the precious moments because I've experienced these so many times and I've just grown to appreciate, you know, that's how guys are. And there's this pride in that moment. And either we can say thank you or we could totally just deflate what is actually him saying, look at what I did.
And with young men, it's so, so vital.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.